Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are really digging into something fundamental for, well, anyone building complex tech systems, especially in larger setups or, say, the public sector.
Yeah, we're zeroing in on IT projects.
Specifically, that connection, which is often critical but maybe overlooked, between the formal contract that starts it all and the very human, sometimes messy stuff like mindset, trust, and, you know, how people actually talk to each other. That's what really decides if things work out.
It absolutely is. It's where the, let's say, the lines on the paper meet the dynamics between real people and how you manage that. It's way more impactful than many people think.
For sure. And guiding us through this is Dr. Gerhard Friedrich. Now, he's an expert in IT governance, got over 30 years as an IT project manager.
Impressive background.
Right. But what makes his view really interesting and what we've pulled from, like his white paper in a podcast clip, is that he also has a doctorate in psychology.
Ah, okay. So that blend of deep technical project experience, I mean, especially his work on public tenders, and he's focused now on public administration.
Right.
That, combined with the psychological insight, it gives him this unique perspective on how contract design really sets the tone, you know, how it impacts the human side of things.
Exactly. So our mission for this deep dive is to really unpack Friedrich's key insights from these sources. Think of it as maybe a shortcut past all the dense legal clauses to get to the core understanding of how these formal agreements really shape the actual work, the relationships, and ultimately whether the IT project succeeds or fails.
Okay, so let's start with the contracts themselves. Friedrich points out that, well, while they look pretty thorough, they mostly focus on capturing certain parts of the work you expect to happen.
Right. So there's the main focus on the result you're aiming for. That means defining requirements, maybe using older terms like Lassenheft, where the client says what you need, or Afflictenheft, where the contractor details how they'll deliver it. Or, you know, if you're more agile, it's epics, user stories, and the business case underneath it all.
And tied right into that result are the timelines, obviously, specific dates, milestones, phases, releases, all that scheduling stuff.
And the money side, budget, resources, pricing models, the what, when, and how much.
Pretty standard stuff so far.
But then Friedrich highlights the section on contributions, what's expected from both sides. It's not just listing what the contractor does.
No, and this is crucial. It's about defining the client's cooperation duties. He uses the German term Mitwirkungsleistungen. These are the things the client absolutely has to do.
Like giving feedback on time, making decisions, providing access.
Exactly, things that let the contractor actually do their work without those clearly defined projects to stall.
Makes sense.
And alongside that are the warning and information obligations. Basically, writing into the contract that both sides have to proactively flag problems or deviations they see coming.
Gotcha. He also covers the modalities, right? How the work actually gets done day to day.
Yep. Like, what methodology are we using? Waterfall?
Yeah.
Agile?
Yeah.
Some kind of hybrid? And what specific tools? Collaboration platforms, development environments, testing tools? It sets the ground rules for the workflow.
Okay. And finally, the rights and obligations.
Right. How billing works, fixed price, time and materials, something else. How you handle changes, scope creep, delays, cost overruns, and really importantly, what happens when you disagree.
So escalation rules, mediation.
Mediation, arbitration, maybe even court as a last resort. It lays out the path for resolving conflict.
Okay, so you've got this detailed document. Seems to cover everything. But Friedrich's big point is that the contract isn't just static words on paper. How does he argue it actively influences the project?
Well, he says something quite powerful. Contracts have a history. The feeling during the negotiation, what got prioritized, whether it felt fair, all that creates an atmosphere.
Okay. So it can set you up for a good cooperative win-win approach.
Or it can create tension right from the start, pushing towards a win-lose situation where somebody feels like they got the short end of the stick.
And he argues this directly shapes the mindset of the people actually doing the work.
Absolutely. If the contract negotiation felt like it was all about drawing hard lines and getting maximum leverage, then the team's focus can shift. Instead of being performance-oriented, you know, focused on building the best thing possible, they become focused on boundary setting, on claim management, watching their back.
So instead of trust, it's hedging your bets, building in security clauses.
Exactly. And instead of being open and transparent, teams might develop that defensive mentality. He calls it Wagenberg mentality.
Circling the wagon.
Circling the wagons. Protecting your own turf and information instead of sharing it openly to solve problems together.
That feels very real. If the contract feels like a trap, you naturally get more guarded. And he also talks about how power shifts during the project.
Oh, definitely. Think about it. In the bidding phase leading up to the contract award, the client has the power. They're being wooed.
Sure.
At the project start, that balance is kind of negotiated, partly through those early interactions, and yes, the contract terms.
Okay, but what about when things go south? When you hit a crisis?
Often, that's when the contractor can gain a lot of leverage, especially if the project's well underway and it's really hard or expensive to just stop and switch vendors.
You become dependent.
You do. And this leads to one of Friedrich's really stark points. The more aggressively a client negotiates up front, maybe really squeezing the terms, the stronger the contractor's backlash or their defensive reaction is likely to be when problems inevitably pop up later. That initial friction just primes the pump for future conflict.
Wow. So the negotiation isn't just technical. It's like the first step in building or maybe breaking the actual working relationship.
Precisely. It reframes the whole thing.
Which leads us to what Friedrich argues is essential, something beyond just the contract words. Because he's very clear, even a good contract is necessary, but it's not enough.
Right. It might give you guide rails, but he says a bad one can be like a straitjacket, just hindering the work.
So what's the indispensable element then?
Trust. And this is where his psychology background really comes in. He argues that a minimum level of trust between the partners is absolutely non-negotiable. Without it, the project's chances are really damaged.
Okay, trust. He breaks that down, doesn't he? Into two dimensions.
Yes. Similar to how we might think about relationship versus factual levels in communication. First, there's trust in seriousness.
Seriousness?
Yeah.
Like, are they reliable? Sincere?
Exactly. Is the other party dependable? Do they mean what they say? Do they follow through? Can you basically take them at their word? That's the relationship level.
All right. And the second dimension?
Trust in competence. This is more factual. Do they actually have the skills, the knowledge, the experience, the resources to do what they promised? Can they technically pull it off?
Right. Seriousness and competence.
And these two, he says, combine into trusting the appropriateness of the contractor's effort. Meaning, are they honest in how they report their time and progress? And are they actually efficient in how they work?
Ah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And Friedrich notes, if you genuinely trust a contractor on both counts, honesty and efficiency, then billing based on effort, like time and materials, is often the simplest, most straightforward way to go.
That makes a lot of sense. Because if you don't trust their efficiency or their honesty, you instinctively want a fixed price, right? To control the cost externally.
Exactly. Which then brings its own set of problems, its own complexities, potential arguments about scope.
Yeah, the change request battles.
Right. And Friedrich's bottom line on trust is really clear. If trust is missing in either of those dimensions, seriousness or competence, then all those detailed contract clauses, they just become crutches.
For crutches, yeah.
You're not really running towards the goal together. You're just kind of limping along, constantly bracing yourself for the next problem, the next disagreement.
Okay, so trust is fundamental. Recognizing that, what has Friedrich actually seen work? Are there specific things you can put in the contract or ways to structure things that help build that trust or at least support it? He mentions some practical elements.
Yes, he does offer some practical strategies based on his experience. One is explicitly using a proof of concept, a POCI, as an early structured phase.
Right, like a trial run.
Exactly. It's designed specifically to nail down the technical approach collaboratively and reduce that upfront uncertainty before you commit to the whole thing.
And maybe structuring the contract so you only buy the expensive software licenses after the POCI is successful.
That's one way. Or even building in an option for another bidder to step in if the first POCI doesn't work out.
Ooh, that creates a clear exit path for the client.
And it definitely motivates the chosen contractor to make that POCI phase count.
What else? He mentioned work packages.
Yes, structuring the price sheet by work packages, sometimes called Gewerken in German, maybe with an upper price limit and some tolerance.
So cost predictability, but also transparency.
Right. And it puts the burden of proof on the contractor if they go over that limit. Other things include giving the client reasonable rights to check on personnel deployment, making sure the right people are on the job.
And stipulating that the contractor has to cover costs if they change their key personnel.
Yes, that's a big one. Frequent staff changes on the contractor side can kill momentum and waste client time on ramp up. Making the contractor bear that cost encourages them to keep teams stable.
Makes sense.
Also, really reinforcing those warning and information duties, making it crystal clear in the contract they have to flag issues proactively, even if the client caused them. And finally, setting up a clear escalation process that requires mediation before anyone runs off to court.
Even if the project gets terminated.
Especially then, perhaps, it keeps the focus on finding solutions, not just winning arguments.
These all feel like ways the contract can actually support a healthier relationship, not just act as a weapon. Which brings us nicely to the second critical element Friedrich hammers home. Communication.
Yeah, he says whenever he asks project teams what's the most important success factor, communication is almost always number one.
And yet,
it's almost always cited as the biggest challenge, too.
Which feels so ironic, doesn't it? We're talking about information and communication technology. You'd think IT folks would be communication pros.
But here's the distinction Friedrich makes. There's technical communication, the ICT side, getting systems to talk, and then there's human communication.
And that's the hard part.
Often, yes. Especially maybe for technically focused people who naturally prioritize factual correctness.
He brings up that Watzlawick axiom, right? You cannot not communicate.
Exactly. Unlike a computer, which just sits there if you give it no input, humans are always communicating. Silence communicates something. A delayed email reply communicates something. A sigh, a frown. It all sends a message.
Intended or not.
Intended or not. And in IT projects, he describes this vivid clash of worlds between the business users and the IT professionals.
Different tribes, almost?
Sort of. They live in different realities, have different priorities, different jargon, even different ways of thinking about requirements. Business might write a story.
Describing the why and what from their world.
While IT needs precise diagrams, exact rules, the how for the system, and that gap is a constant source of potential friction.
Let's use his example, the user story. When I, as a caseworker, release a payment, the system decides if a second person needs to provide their release.
Okay, sounds clear enough, right? From the caseworker's view, the intent is obvious, it's a security check.
But for the developer?
For the developer who has to code that, it's instantly riddled with questions. Ambiguities.
Like, what rules exactly trigger needing a second person? Is it always just one second person? How is that person picked?
Yeah.
Random, based on role, amount.
Can the first caseworker influence the choice? All these details are vital for the code, but the business user might not have even considered them, or just assumed they were obvious.
Right. And the typical IT reaction, Friedrich says, can be pretty blunt.
Often, yeah. Just go into the tracking tool. Find the story, add a comment, requirement is unclear. Maybe list the questions, hit save, move on.
Okay, factually correct, but what about the relationship impact of that?
Now we're back to the human side. That purely factual, maybe slightly abrupt comment. To the person who wrote the requirement, it can feel like a criticism, a personal attack even.
Like being told you don't know what you want, or your work isn't good enough.
Exactly. Even if that wasn't the intention at all, it can touch on deeper feelings, maybe feeling judged, maybe reminding them of school, getting things marked wrong.
Ouch.
And Friedrich stresses trying to shut down that emotional reaction, saying things like, let's leave emotions out of this or stick to the facts. That's completely counterproductive.
It just makes things worse.
It escalates the stress, the tension. He's seen it lead to shouting matches, business accusing IT of being difficult on purpose, IT calling users clueless.
That clash of worlds just boiling over.
Precisely, because the communication failed to bridge that gap effectively.
So, faced with this communication breakdown, what's Friedrich's recommendation? It sounds almost too simple.
Acceptance.
Acceptance. Just accept the unclear requirement.
No, not accepting the requirement as technically sufficient if it isn't. It's about accepting the other person and their perspective.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
It means choosing not to respond with aggression or criticism, not making them feel attacked. Instead, trying to understand why they wrote it that way, or maybe what their underlying frustration is. Maybe they feel ignored or overwhelmed by the tech complexity.
So instead of that blunt, requirement unclear comment, what does acceptance sound like?
Well, he suggests starting with appreciation. Acknowledge their effort. Thanks for writing this story. I can see exactly what you need from your point of view, and I get what system decides means to you.
Okay, validation first.
Then explain the IT need clearly but respectfully. The thing is, the system isn't smart like a person. It needs every single step, every rule spelled out. It can't just decide unless we tell it exactly how to decide.
Right, explaining the system's limitations.
And then, this is key, you ask for their help. Make it collaborative. Could you help us figure out the specific rules the system should use to make that decision work technically?
So it shifts completely. It's not your requirement is bad. It's Let's work together to translate your need into something the system can execute.
Exactly. It becomes shared problem solving. And it relies on that fundamental mindset shift Friedrich keeps coming back to.
Which is?
Accepting that these differences in knowledge, in jargon, in perspective between business and IT are totally normal. Misunderstandings aren't a failure. They're a natural result of these different worlds interacting.
So drop the judgmental attitude. No more clueless users or obstructive IT.
Yes. Replace it with acceptance that these differences just are. They're part of the landscape you have to navigate.
And he's clear this acceptance has to go both ways, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's not just on IT or just on business. Projects work best when everyone accepts these different viewpoints. What seems easy to one side might be incredibly hard for the other. What feels essential to one might seem like a nice to have to the other.
It's about communicating on eye level.
Showing mutual appreciation even when you disagree. Working through the differences respectfully, not letting them fester into conflict.
And looping back to Watzlawick, if you just stay silent about an unclear requirement, if you delay.
That silence is negative communication. Waiting, hoping it'll magically resolve, or just dropping that blunt comment and walking away. It breeds frustration. It confirms that defensive circling the wagons mentality.
So you have to react quickly.
Yes. Even if it's just, hey, saw this. I have some questions to make sure we build it right. Can we grab 15 minutes to clarify? Quick, clear, collaborative communication.
This whole deep dive really highlights something crucial. Contracts are, well, there's the necessary paperwork, the framework.
But they're not the whole story. Not even close.
The real success hinges on these less tangible, very human things.
Right. The contract sets the stage, maybe provides some guardrails. But trust, that's the bedrock. That allows real collaboration.
And communication, navigating that clash of worlds with acceptance, with respect, that's where the daily wins and losses happen. That's what determines if the project flows or just gets bogged down.
Absolutely. You need both the structure and the healthy dynamics within it.
So based on Friedrich's insights, which feel really powerful, here's a thought for you, the listener, to maybe chew on. Given how much these human factors, this mindset, this trust, this communication style actually influence the outcome, how much energy should we really pour into perfecting every last subclause of the contract itself compared to actively investing time and effort in building trust and improving how we talk to each other within whatever framework that contract provides?
Yeah, it's a great question. Is the contract mainly a technical blueprint? Or is its most vital job actually setting the stage for the human relationship that makes the technical delivery even possible?
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.